This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
They're going to go. They're not going to use the timeout. Plenty of time here.
It's Tatum. Robinson's on him. Tatum maneuvering.
Back-to-back 20-point leads blown. Knicks lead 2-0. Do they have to win Game 3? I kind of feel like they need to win on Saturday. Joining me right now, my friend Tim Legler. By the way, what's your next game? Do you have one of the games on Friday night?
I do not. I've got two games out in San Francisco, Saturday and Monday, Games 3 and 4 of the Minnesota Golden State Series.
With no Steph. We'll talk about that in a minute, but I played your sound yesterday about the way you felt about Game 1 in the Boston-New York series, called it an abomination, the way they played. What'd you think of last night?
Yeah, so look, I actually thought that the beginning of the game, it was clear to me their intent was to get into the paint, more particularly Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. I thought both of those guys had a different approach. Derek White was probably the only guy that looked similar. You know, he's going to look, he's got a very quick release. He's a high percentage 3-point shooter. He's going to look for him. So I don't think he changed much, but I thought the other two guys looked different at the start of the game. And they weren't making threes, the ones that they did take, but I was happy as just an analyst watching them have better balance in their offense and not taking the very first open look they got. And they built a lead that way. Their defense was excellent. I was prepared to go on SVP after the game, and all the notes I was taking was leading me to a possession of them defensively, because I thought I saw some great things out of them there, and then a possession of turning down a three that led to something better in the paint. Like, this was going to be my two-play touchscreen. I took over 20 pages of notes on this game. And then all of a sudden, Kevin, here we go. And it wasn't like they started just completely, you know, taking threes the way they did in Game 1 that opened the door for the Knicks, because that's exactly what they did. By extending the game, they created more possessions in that game because of how quickly they were shooting the ball, right. And the Knicks needed all of that. That's not what happened last night. Last night, they only took three or four during that entire stretch when they were erasing that lead. They were getting into the paint. They were shooting mid-rangers. They had a couple plays at the rim. They just looked incredibly tight to me in everything that they were doing. So they were not able to convert, to stop the momentum. It only takes a basket or two, and they win the game in about a five-minute stretch. It was going to take two baskets probably to win the game, and they couldn't get it done. And I think the environment in the building for a home team in that situation, the shock that was probably being projected onto the court from the fans, I think it affected some of those guys. I think Tatum was affected by the narrative over the last 48 hours about all the threes they were taking, all the threes he was taking. I don't remember him hunting a single step back three in the entire game. He only took five for the night, and he takes 10 on average. And so I think he was really going overboard to try to prove to people that like he wasn't going to continue to go into this trap of just settling for 3-point shots. And I think his mind was fried the entire night. That's what I think. And then in the fourth quarter, the pressure of the moment really just engulfed that entire team where they couldn't operate normally offensively. And the Knicks smelled it, tasted it, and they were able to do the exact same thing they did to him in game one and flip the script in a period of about 8 minutes.
Yeah, I described it as like the yips. I mean, it really looked like it. He that corner three that he had, he took his time and almost aimed it. You know, that's not the way shooters shoot it. You know, what's interesting about the way you described game one versus game two? Game one, like, would you have had an issue had they just not taken the volume of threes so quickly with the lead? If they had ultimately shortened the game, which I totally agree with you, they didn't do, and it's still, you know, shot, and they wouldn't have shot as many because there would have been fewer possessions, because it is kind of the way they play, yeah, to a certain degree. It was just different in game one because of how quickly they went.
No, that's really what the problem was, and people, you know, that heard my critique, I hope that's what they took from it, because that's what I was talking about. When I said it was insulting to the game of basketball, that's really what I meant. You know, the basketball gods are looking at them and like saying, you played a great game. You got a 20-point lead. Well, then the way basketball works, you don't like completely change your identity. It's not like you come up the floor and throw the ball into Al Horford in the post for the next 8 minutes. That's clearly not what they're going to do. This is their style. I get it. They've got a lot of guys that can shoot it. What I'm saying is, why were they taking shots that quickly off of one pass? Or I had examples written down, and you know, the funny thing is, it wasn't just Tatum, although he probably took five or six off the dribble step back threes without anybody else touching the ball in that possession. I was actually more concerned with the couple of the ones Horford took, a couple of the ones Drew Holiday took. Drew Holiday ran down a long rebound in the corner right in front of the bench.
And just fired it up.
The opposing bench, and turned and fired a three with a guy draped on him, yeah, as if it was the last play of the game and they were down by two. That's literally what it looked like. And it was almost, I made a joke last night, it almost got to the point, it looked like whoever makes one first wins a car. Like, that's what it looked like. Yeah. There was some sort of competition going on. That's how quick they were just letting them fly. Single crack of daylight, I'm letting it fly. And of course, according to Second Spectrum, which I have a lot of problems with, some of those are labeled uncontested. I would probably differ in that opinion. But the one thing that is not disputable is you can have a shot that's rushed, even if it's uncontested. And they did that repeatedly, 37 threes after halftime. I mean, you've got to be kidding me. In a game you're controlling. So my problem wasn't necessarily the sheer volume, because they could have gotten threes at the end of those possessions too.
Right.
If once the ball hit the paint and then kicked out, and they you know, they go around the horn a little bit, like that's when they're at their best and you can't catch up to the ball, and they have too many guys that can shoot it, and that's when they just bury teams. But when they come down and there's this shell that's never penetrated on the perimeter before they shoot the ball, when you're up 20, no, I think that is insulting to the game of basketball, because that's not how you win games. And that was my big problem with them. I don't think that was as much a problem in game two. They were actually, I think, thinking about it a little bit more. They still took 40, which is seven below their season average. It's going to still put them probably in the top 10 teams in the league in the regular season. So it's still a good number of threes. But to me, this was all about the pressure of the moment completely paralyzing them. And I mean, that goes, yeah, all the way from the players through the coaching staff, everything. And that's, I think, why Mazzulla didn't take that timeout at the end of the game, which is inexplicable to me, because I think he might have even felt the pressure and not knowing what to draw up. So let's just let him play. Let the players solve it. On a night when you're that bad offensively, Kevin, you can't walk home with a timeout in your pocket when you're taking your keys out and you're emptying your keys on your nightstand. Oh, there's a timeout in here. No, you can't do that. Not on a night they're that bad offensively. They needed you to take that off their plate. and figure out something, inbounding the ball from half court with 12 seconds to go, that can potentially create the switch you want, create some sort of spacing to allow a guy maybe to get downhill in a one-point game, instead of just saying, oh, I'm just going to trust Jason Tatum because the last time we ran this, he got a dunk. So let's just go to it again.
That's what he was. That had to be what he was thinking, because when he didn't call the timeout, I think he was just thinking he could go coast to coast. That was just a defensive breakdown on the possession before, and they were ready for it with two players ready to stop the penetration when he got down there.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available if at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, listen. I was already very interested in that last sequence, right? Going into the post game with Scott last night, and then I became extremely interested as I'm sitting there listening to his post game presser, Mazzulla, because he said exactly verbatim. He said, "The first question, well, any consideration of taking a timeout right there?" And he said, "Well, you know, we just." Got a great action off the last time he ran it, so we're just going to run it again. You know, I was hoping to get the same thing, and they covered it differently. Yeah, no kidding. The first time was an uncontested dunk by Tatum, which was really crazy to think a guy could go coast to coast and dunk the ball without
being
touched.
On that kind of a possession, yeah.
Yeah, it was possession that important. Yeah. But the bottom line is there's still 24 seconds left in the game when he did that. Okay, so the Knicks have plenty of time to respond to that. This last one, you're taking it out with 12 seconds. You really think the Knicks are going to let you do that again? No, they're going to lose the game if that happens. So he just should have, to me, anticipated something was going to be different, and the big difference was on the first one, Ananobi picked him up 75 feet up the floor, which allowed Horford to set that brush screen at half court. They got Ananobi off of him, and now Tatum's going 100 miles an hour at Mitchell Robinson, who's 35 feet from the basket. Yeah, he can blow right by him. The second time, as Tatum's coming up the floor, there's nobody in the picture. Like, everybody is back, and you can. I even froze it on the touchscreen I did. Horford is trying to screen, and literally he's sandwiched up on one side Ananobi, on one side Robinson, but they're right at the three-point line. So, I stopped it and froze it. As Tatum's crossing half court, there's still 9.8 seconds left. And Mazzulla's standing right up there by half court, right near an official. Like,
could have called the timeout there.
If that's what you thought it was going to look like, and you said that in your post-game presser, I got news for you. You should have identified as he's crossing half court, it doesn't look like that at all. Now, it's all kinds of traffic in there. Tatum has had a terrible night offensively. Maybe I should take a timeout right here. And we still have 9.5 seconds to run something constructive out of bounds. Kevin, think about this. How many times, honestly, do you watch games in the NBA and at the end of a game, a star player, which both of those guys are, don't even get off either a shot attempt or a pass? It happened twice in a row to them. Jaylen Brown got the ball ripped out of his hands by Bridges in the first game. And last night, Tatum jumps in the air. He's swallowed up by two guys jumping at him. Brown is wide open on the wing, but Tatum has already committed to the shot, tries to throw pass in the air, gets stolen. It's just so rare to see a star player not even get a desperation shot up on the backboard or make a pass to another guy and hopefully they can make a shot. They didn't even get a shot off in two game-winning situations in the playoffs. It's
the time left on the inbounds in overtime in game one was a lot less time. I think it was less than 3 seconds.
No, you're right. But I totally agree with you.
It's a guy
would get it up somehow. That's my point though. On that flare pass they threw to Brown.
Exactly. You know,
normally, they're going to somehow, some way, they're going to get some desperation heave up at the rim. I mean, he just got the ball ripped right out of his hands. And then last night, of course, Tatum gets in the air and throws it away. And I froze it because I wanted to see how much time was left when Bridges made contact with the ball. It was over 3 seconds.
Yeah.
So you had Brown all alone on the wing. If somehow you can get that ball out of that to him, now who knows what happens, because he didn't have a very good night either, especially the second half. You know, he either shoots a three or maybe he takes a one dribble pull-up 18-footer, but he's getting that shot off. But Tatum could not get the ball to him, and now here we go, man. We're sitting here. We just saw history. No team's ever blown two 20-point leads in a row in the playoffs. No team's ever come back from two 20-point leads. So I want to get
to some of the other series, but real quickly on this one. I said earlier in the show, it ain't over yet. I mean, I don't feel like it is. And I think game three is really important for the Knicks to win. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. Totally. I agree with both of those statements. I don't think it's over. And I do think if the Knicks lose game three, particularly what I think the Celtics would have to look like to win that game, it would mean that they got back on track offensively. And they probably had some guys play well in the fourth quarter, because I don't think they're blowing the Knicks out. I think it's going to be a close game. If they win a close game and you got Tatum or Brown play well, or their team play well when they need to, they're going to feel like an absolute brand new team going into game four. So now you've got a real fight on your hands if you're the Knicks. Look, they've taken control. How much more control can you take winning two games on the road to start the series? I agree, it's not over. And I do think if the Knicks are going to get the Celtics' best game to this point in game three, sometimes when you can get away from the noise of your home crowd and the anxiety that's in the building in a tight situation like this, it might be the best thing for them to go play on the road and feel like an us against the world mentality, rather than at home where every time somebody misses a three right now, there's a groan, a collective groan from 20,000 people. Everybody feels it. On the road, you're not going to feel that. So I think it's the best thing that could happen to them. Go play in the Garden. It's going to be a wild, wild environment on Saturday afternoon. And the Knicks have a chance to absolutely put a stranglehold on this thing. If they lose, you're back into a situation, I think, headed for a very long series and potentially a game seven on the road.
All right. Let's shift out west. Do the Warriors up 1-0 in this series with Minnesota without Steph for at least, I think, the next two minimum, maybe three games? Does Golden State have a chance to win this series without Steph for three games?
That'd be unlikely to think they're going to win it. I think they'll hang. And I think, I was thinking about it today, what could be likely is win a game while he's out, down 3-2, coming back to San Francisco for game six, Steph emerges. I think that's the shortest timeline for him, and I think that's probably the situation they would be in. I think they can get one. I don't know they can get more than that.
And I would certainly, if they got it to a seventh and deciding game with Steph healthy, I would give the Warriors a major chance.
I agree with that, because they've managed those situations incredibly well. They've just managed one in the previous round. A couple of years ago, they went and won a game seven on the road against Sacramento in the first round. So they're used to that environment, and they've got, I think, guys that will step up and do what they have to do in that moment to make plays. The question is, their defense will keep them in it, I believe, over the next two, three games, whenever he's out. Can those other guys score enough without Curry on the floor? Because he creates so many opportunities for those role players because of his presence. Yeah, the Moses Moody's and the Pajemskis and the Buddy Hields of the world. What do those guys do against a very good defense to create their own offense? That's the big question.
You know what? I'm curious. I want to get to Denver, the Denver OKC series as well. But I thought Kerr the other night, the use of his bench after Steph was out, going as deep into places of his bench like Pat Spencer that he hadn't gone to was fascinating. Were you able to make sense of it? It worked, but describe it from your standpoint.
Yeah, he didn't have a choice. I don't think I've ever seen a coaching staff more pressed as they're standing there watching that game thinking, please, one basket. Somebody give me one basket. And yeah. Buddy Hield actually was the guy that hit the biggest shot. He hit a corner three when that lead got down to 10. And it cut it in half, basically. And Buddy Hield hit a corner three. And I thought that was the biggest shot. You could almost see this collective sigh of relief when that ball went through. And so now they're thinking, okay, we're going to be able to hold on. Everybody looked more relaxed after that.
Denver wins game one. I've watched now all of Oklahoma City's postseason games. I think they're the best team, but they don't have the experience. But what do you think? Are they the best team, and will they win it all?
Well, I think Oklahoma City's been the best team in the league this year, the best team I've seen. Has played their best basketball. Oklahoma City's the best. Now, this is only their second time kind of going through this on this level. So they didn't handle it very well last year. Let's see how they handle it this year. But I do think now, particularly with the way Boston looks, Cleveland is obviously hanging on by a thread with all their injuries, down 0-2, going on the road. I think Oklahoma City is
this
firmly
will
in the
be recorded.
Now.
All right. You're jumping into your rental car or your car. Thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it. Good luck on the next two out in San Francisco. You're great on the broadcast. All right. Talk to you. Tim Legler, everybody, calling in from wherever he was getting off a plane and getting into a car. Nice of him to do that. He's got the Warriors' next two games on Saturday night on ABC against Minnesota, and then on Monday night on ESPN against Minnesota as well. After tonight. Tonight is game two of that series. All right, that's it for the day. Caps tonight, back tomorrow.